This is the Game Designers of North Carolina podcast.
Welcome to episode 36 of the Game Designers of North Carolina podcast, the most variable podcast in the business. My name is James Myers, and I'm your host. Today we're going to be talking about asymmetry and variable player powers. With me in the studio are two designers with varied opinions on the topic. First, we have Drew Hicks.
Howdy.
And second, Josh Mills.
How's everybody doing out there today? I'm ready. I'm ready for this, Drew.
So before we get into that, let's talk about what's in the oven. What have you guys been working on lately?
So, fittingly for the podcast, I've been working on variable player powers for my game Access. Basically, there's a couple of different things. I think adding different player starts and player powers to the game we're going to do to help guide players through. And I guess we'll talk about whether or not we think that's ever effective. So, that's something I'm working on.
Alright, what about you, Josh?
Been working on my Day of the Dead game that I traded for Penny Press. So I really need to get that done. I keep going through different iterations because I want it to feel like a party, and it's hard to make a competitive game feel like a party, and I'm not going to make a co-op. And then also I've been working a lot on Manhattan Dice Contest stuff and got that all submitted, and that's pretty much all I've been doing.
All right. So let's jump right into the main topic, variable player powers and asymmetry in games. So we're going to attempt to define these today.
Cool, yeah. We can do that.
I mean, you could define them if you want to, but I don't like rules.
Wow.
Drew, so a little background. Me and Drew like went to school and he is all like, you know, scholarly and stuff.
Yeah, and Josh went to Jupiter.
I went to Jupiter, and I hate words.
We did have a little bit of a discussion coming into this episode about, like, what exactly is the overlap between those things? When people use them to describe games, like, is there, like, what's the Venn diagram of those two things for you?
Yeah, for me, I mean, asymmetry clearly to me means something different than variable player powers. So from a high level, to me, variable player powers are basically like, hey, here's the system of the game. You get two orange things instead of one, because you're super cool. But you still use them all the same way. Whereas asynchronous, totally different topic, but asymmetry is more a system difference when you're actually playing. So the way you interact with the game and the things you actually do are fundamentally different.
It's like the types of moves that you can make are completely or mostly different from the types of moves another player can make, types of actions you can do.
Like if you were playing, one person was playing checkers on one side and somebody was playing chess on the other.
Okay.
Very asymmetrical.
So you said that if it's a systems difference, you think that's more like asymmetry. What do you think about player powers like in Cosmic Encounter, where the player power is like a completely external to the rules system thing? Like your ships don't die, or anytime you do combat, you get to do this entirely different. Like, you play combat completely differently, or any of these types of things. Is that kind of...
Well, one, I haven't played, so okay. It's hard for me to say. But then you start to blur the line a little bit. But I still think if the core result and system and objective is the same,
then
it's still on the player power side. It's just adding more fancy fluff stuff around the baseline thing, which is, hey, if you attack somebody, you get to hit them first. Except instead of hitting them first, it's like, you get to roll three dice, take one dice, go to the library, get a book out, come back, smack it with them. It's still the same result, because you either do more damage or not.
Okay.
Yeah, I think in the discussion that we were having online with Mark McGee, who unfortunately took ill with the plague and could not be here tonight, I think my big definition was, if you've got variable player powers, you're all trying to win the same way. But if you've got asymmetry, you're probably going to win. Your main objective is most likely different than the other players.
And I said that was also crap. So, because I think it's on the systems level, the way you're interacting with everybody and the game has to be different. Otherwise, it is just you riffing. It's just you doing stuff within the game system that you've already built that leads to one thing or the other. I think player powers could... The way I think about it is player powers are if I'm three rounds in and I've already made some decisions and now you're going to hand, but instead you're going to force me down that road, right? And that's a lot of, like, Euro type games or whatever, like, any engine building game, for instance, like, I'm going to be the person that kind of can do this, right? Then the player powers are kind of just that, but it speeds you up to get there.
So you'd say variable player powers are more like you're playing an engine building game after three turns is when you're actually starting, because there's already something different that you can do.
That's how I think about it, at least from a designer's perspective, if I was going to do player powers.
Most of the player powers that you typically see are things like that, I guess. Either trying to push your strategy down a different, your development down a different path, or giving you some kind of leg up with one or the other of the actions in the game. Like, the way it's typically done in Euros is kind of like that.
So how do you see the Venn diagram, then? Like, between those two?
I almost want to say that they're pretty separate. Like, I don't think that variable player powers, like, necessarily contribute to the game being asymmetrical at all, unless they're those types of... Unless they create a completely different action space or a completely different move that player is able to do that nobody else could ever do under any circumstances. So the type that you see in Euro games, I think it doesn't really do enough, where, you know, you get 2 points for every two dogs that you found, whatever thing happens.
Love that game.
Yeah, Dog Finder.
Dog Finder, 2017.
Uwe Rosenberg's, yeah. Or you can turn some resources into some other resources and, like, a more efficient way than anyone else is able to do, but everyone's able to sort of do something like that. I don't think that causes the game to rise to, like, being asymmetrical for me.
Like, what's a good example for you of asymmetry in the game?
Well, I mean, there's a trivial one, which is Vast, which is the one we would probably...
Like, what's the next one? Because that's the one everybody talks about, right? Because it's like the news bee's knees, and you can be in the cave, and everybody's like, ah, it's crazy awesome. Which we could talk about it, and that's a good example. I just wanted to...
Let's see. Let's go through a few examples and see which ones kind of stick. Right. So we threw out Vast. That's going to be later, because that's the hotness.
That's its own hour.
Perhaps... I would say Space Cadets, but that's a co-op game. Although the Dice Duel one's not co-op, and everyone has a completely different thing that they're doing in that.
It seems like a lot of co-op games end up having player powers to try to combat quarterbacking.
Oh, for sure.
So, right, but in reality, there's no, the only reason why they're there is just to feel like you have an identity.
Maybe, like, you have something that you're supposed to be doing, like, it's...
And remembering,
to give each player a thing that they're supposed to be kind of focusing on.
Yeah, their agency
and a reason for them to be doing it over anybody else. But in something like Space Cadets or Space Cadets Dice Duel versus something like Pandemic, everybody's still kind of moving around the board and dealing with cubes in roughly the same way. Like, pretty much the same kind of rules. Like, some people are a little better at some things, or can move in a way that other people can't. But you're still handling the stuff on the board in the same way. But in Dice Duel, like, you have a board that dice go on in a way that is not the same as anyone else's board. You're trying to make combinations, or you're trying to roll to create shield points on different sides of your ship. And the things that you do with the dice that you get... or maybe you're not even getting dice and you're the captain and you're handing them out. Like, the things that you do, not necessarily on your turn because it's real time, but the things that you're doing in the game are really different based on which position you're playing or which station, I guess, you are.
Okay, so here's something to ask then. If everybody has a different system within the game, and it's not the same system as the other players are playing, they're all essentially playing their own mini game. Does that mean the game is asymmetric?
Yeah. If everyone's interacting with a different part of the rule set, like, almost mutually exclusive parts of the rule set, then I would say it's asymmetrical, for sure. But there's another kind of weird example, so I'm trying to think of one that's more like a typical competitive...
Well, you could almost take any sport, too. Like, if you're playing soccer, right? Like, there's difference between the positions in terms of forward or defense, right? But then there's the goalie, right?
Oh, sure.
But, I mean, it's the... On your side of the team, of course, the two teams are symmetrical.
But for each player...
they have a different discipline to be able to execute.
And they also have some different sets of rules, maybe, that they can interact with.
I mean,
with
that's the goalie would be the only one that would have a truly separate thing of rules.
Yeah.
But, like, certain rules apply to certain positions more often than other ones. the like for instance playing like offense, you got to make sure you're not pushing off sides. But then the inverse of that is the defense has to be aware of it as well from the other team. So I always think about it in terms of tries to look at it in sports, because I feel because there's direct conflict and competition, and people do a lot of different things. Like baseball is crazy in the amount of skill sets you need, or in this place, say a player board you would need to execute your thing. Given you're on two different, like most of the time you have equal teams always, right? And you're always going that way. But like a pitcher, I mean, there's a whole team of pitchers. And then there's the rest of the team, right? Like, that's super weird if you think, like, any other sport, they're not bringing in, like, okay, we have all the guy that plays this position, it's just, they're all over there warming up to come in the game and hope that the defense doesn't have to do anything. Mm. But that's where I start to think about it is, like, how can you make players feel that way? And is that a player power? Is it asymmetry? Like, I don't know where it lies in those real-world examples in terms of sports.
They're a little weird because if you try to, like, codify the rule set of those things, most people, like, baseball's, I think, a little bit more out there than a lot of the other sports.
No, baseball,
it's the most out there.
Yeah, it's like a drunk wizard invented it. And they're like, no, I get this, like, one dude against, like, the whole team at one time. What are the other dudes doing? They're just cheering on the bench.
Hanging out.
Like, what? What game is that? That would never be a real thing, and then it is.
Yeah, and then you've got something like bottom of the ninth that boils it down to one-on-one, pitcher versus batter, and the whole field is just kind of an afterthought.
Which is essentially what baseball, well, it's the catcher that got a very big role, but...
I got two more for you.
All right, two more amazing examples.
These are really good, actually. These are much
better. I have one in my back pocket I'm going to pull out here in a second.
Okay, but you got to wait.
I am, because you're going to steal it.
Yeah. So the first one is the very first asymmetrical game that I ever saw or played, which was from, I don't know, did any of you have, like, the Sid Saxon, like, Klutz game book? It was just, like, a big board book that came with black and white stones. Nope. Really cool thing. I need to pick up a copy somewhere, because mine got garage sale'd or something, garbage like that. But I had a game in it, I think it was in there, called Fox and Geese. And it was like
Fox and Geese is like a classic
asymmetrical.
Where
one player controls one piece that's the fox, the other player controls four pieces that are the geese. Their wing conditions and their movement are different.
I can't remember, but it's along with like Nine Man Morris. There's like a lot of those type of games.
A whole bunch of things in there. And so the geese are trying to surround the fox so he can't move, and that's how you'll win. And the fox is trying to capture all the geese so that he can win.
Yeah, it's like chess four turns in.
Sure. Well, I mean, there's some different win conditions, right? The geese can't capture anything.
Yeah, that's true.
Yeah. So there's a different set of rules there. And the other one is Stronghold, which...
The
game Stronghold. One player's defending a castle and setting up defenses. The other player's setting up forces that attack that castle, and they don't ever switch back and forth. That's just the side that you're playing. And the rule sets interlock, but they don't really cross over. So neither side is kind of like doing the same types of actions, but there's resources that get passed basically back and forth between them as they take actions. So,
and that to me that's asynchronous. That's asynchronous. Kind of definition. Yeah, or asymmetrical. Two words are the same in my brain, people. Sorry.
Yeah,
they're just the same, and I don't know why. But in to me that's asymmetrical.
Yeah,
but. They're sharing part of that center system, which makes it, I think, work as a game.
Yeah, if there's no
commonality, you're just then there. It is nonsense.
Right. Even in Space Cadets example, like someone's giving you the dice that you play your part of the game with, and so that's the pipeline between shield guy and the captain and the weapons guy is that they're all interacting with this ship on the board with this pool of dice. So yeah, there does have to be some kind of common ground, like that they're both affecting, but the way that they interact with it is.
And from a designing perspective, I would say you would have to have that core common ground, or like the just communicating what the game is to people would be so cumbersome.
Sure.
That I think it would, a lot of people, of course, some people would revel in that, right?
Yeah.
But it would, as a designer, it would make it frustrating that you couldn't use these shared systems, which I think is true of a lot of people, and that's why they use player powers. Just like a weak sauce version of the...
Well, I think that's one of the big criticisms that's been levied against Vast, is that to learn the game, you essentially have to teach however many players each a different game.
Yeah.
To be able to play it. And so the game will last an hour, hour and a half, but if each player takes 10 minutes to learn, it could take you an hour to learn the game.
Yeah.
So how about something like Seven Wonders? Where, okay. Like, because I played it once and you just have all the normal, like, here's my wonder or whatever, and you're looking for different, like, the system for getting the stuff is all the same.
Mm-hmm.
But what you can do and the abilities you have are all different.
I think that gets into, like, the sort of blurry zone of factions or characters. Like, characters in a fighting game or factions in a strategy game. Like, you're doing generally the same stuff. Seven Wonders, like, you can trade in cards to get a Wonder Stage, and what that Wonder Stage does is going to be a little different for you. But the general shape of the interaction that you're doing is the same.
It's essentially the same.
Right?
Yeah. I was actually surprised to see that was listed as variable player powers, because it feels like you're doing exactly the same thing, you're just getting a slightly different reward.
I think I'd say it's variable player powers. It's just not... It's not asymmetrical. It's just... Yeah, I think we were talking about earlier, it's... You do a thing, something slightly better than the guy to your left, and something slightly worse than the guy to your left, and it doesn't change, like... what options are really available to you. It just changes how much you want
to
do that.
The true player power there is sitting next to the person that doesn't know what they're doing.
Right, yeah.
Like, that's, yeah. Like you.
So isn't every game asymmetrical?
Yeah, that's what I was saying.
Just because, like, where's Steve sitting?
Because, like, I mean, if you think about it, like, all the... Like, any game where you take turns is like player powers or asymmetry, because you can't all be even.
So, like, you're saying, like, one turn into the game, I knocked out one of your guys, it's asymmetrical now, like...
Well, no, like, I went first.
Oh, alright.
Right?
Well, that's it for today.
No, but on a high level, that's essentially what a lot of those player power things are. Like,
yeah, go first could be a player power, and I think I've seen a few games where it is.
Sure, and then, like... You have more money when you start, right?
Yeah.
That's a classic, I'm going to fix this, but not really, I'm just going to make you feel better about being last with these $2.
Yeah.
And it's not worth it, but here's $2.
It's always worth it, it's great.
It's never worth it.
Okay. But yeah, so that's like a really, like, super minor variable player power, like just turn order, like, you go first and you get some dogs.
To me, yeah, so it goes back to the system thing for me. It's like, how do you make that system interaction unique? And that might be the word I look for in terms of defining, you know, asymmetry, is just, do I do something unique, like truly unique, not
a variation.
Not a variation of said thing, but a completely different thing. But that's hard.
So now that we've talked about some various games that use asymmetry and variable player powers, let's talk about how to implement them well as a designer and what they'll do in your game.
Well, right. Maybe why you would implement them, because, yeah. So from my perspective, I want you to feel like you have a player power, right? But I want you to make those decisions through the game, so by the end of it, you feel like you're the person that can smack people down real hard, but you can't take a lot of damage, and you're not going to heal anybody, right? Like, I want you to move through the game system in that way, where you build that experience. I think what player powers do, or abilities, or whatever you want to call them, is it accelerates that, it holds people's hands that normally wouldn't necessarily see that in the system, and to me that's less interesting as a player and a designer, which sounds counterintuitive, right? It's not like, oh, everybody's starting even and then varying off the path seems like standard fare. Everybody's starting off differently, like they can do these objectives, that's harder, that's more interesting, that's more replayable, and to me it's like, no, you're just telling me where to go.
So you're saying that's bad, but don't you think that's helpful sometimes in, like, some of these big, like, sandbox games where there's a billion things to do, like...
I wouldn't say bad would be... is not what I prefer.
Okay.
Right?
But, yeah, sure.
But I can be wrong, right?
Okay.
Like, my opinion's different.
So, Josh, you're more along the lines of the variable player powers shoehorn you into a particular strategy when you want freedom. Unless the game happens to be enormous, which is what Drew's talking about, the sandbox, where the variable player powers can show you a path through that sandbox.
I think what it is what the Euro-y type games tend to be lazy when they do it, which is why I don't tend to like it. However, some of the more, like, larger scale stuff has way more interesting things going on.
So, I think that you're generally right in what you said, that the player powers, or, like, things like the hand of cards that you get dealt out at the start of Agricola or things like this, can kind of push you into doing, you know, you don't get to really, you can make a decision about what you want to do, but it'll be wrong.
Like, you're going to love carrots no matter
right,
what, but you better really
you
love
should go
them.
Go get the carrots or whatever. And I think, kind of counterintuitively, that system being added into the game can be good for helping people orient themselves in it when they don't know what's going on.
That's true.
But after players have gotten, like, accustomed to the system or accustomed to that type of, maybe even to that type of game, maybe they don't want or need that anymore in those types of big games and can say, all right, well, maybe we should just play from... It's weird because, like, that's my intuition about it, but most games do it the other way.
They
right?
do it
like,
the other way.
The basic game is everyone starts exactly evenly, and the advanced game is I tell you which strategy to do, which seems awkward.
It seems odd. Very odd.
But like, do you think that's useful? Do you think that's, like... Have you played a game where that felt helpful, I guess?
Well, honestly, I end up playing... Like, most all of them are play the baseline thing first, right?
That's true.
So then when you play it the next time or the third time with the player power thing, it gives you the impression of variability. And, like, there's replayability and variability in this game. But in reality, I don't think it changes how I play and perceive the game very much. If
okay.
anything, it limits my choices, whereas playing flat or from even or whatever...
Sure.
Doesn't.
So, do you think that's bad if a player playing from scratch always does the same strategy? Or is variability useful for kind of nudging people out of that? Like, I'm always going to go for carrots.
If that's the way the person wants to play and they have fun playing that way, then why should I tell them to play any other way? I personally want to try different stuff because it's fun to explore the system. That's why I'm playing. I'm not playing
sure.
to be... the best ever at executing this said system.
Okay.
Right? Now, there are people that definitely are like that, right? But then you're playing with different objectives. And that
sure.
gets really weird when you have multiple different people all playing a game for different reasons but their own philosophy behind it.
That's true.
Like, it's the same as, like, if I go play ARMS or Splatoon, I am not playing ranked. Because I just want to maybe win a game every now and then to buy a new gun or ARM upgrade.
Okay, so while we're talking about video games, you kind of brought up one in my head that does, I don't know about asymmetry, but certainly really wildly different starting positions pretty well, and that's PlayerUnknown's Battlegrounds. If you played that
oh, yeah,
at all?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Okay, so one of the things that game does kind of interestingly is because the places you're able to drop into the start of every match are pretty different, and like you can... kind of get to most places if you want to, but it's not going to work out the same way every time. And the items or gear that spawn anywhere are going to be really different. You really can't, like, even if you would prefer to lock yourself into a strategy, it's difficult to execute that every time.
And that is why that game, I think, is so wildly successful.
Okay.
Right? Because the game is solving the solution to that problem, and that problem is always different. It's almost like deck building
mm-hmm.
for when people used to play Magic. Like, here's a system, like Magic is like, here's a card game battle system, here's this, all the stuff that exists that we know. And you have to do this part before that to make that work. Well, we've had shooters and big, like, there's nothing crazy new about that, right? What's different is adapting to those situations. So that is the game.
It's a lot like a draft versus a coming in with a constructed deck and something like Magic. You have different stuff available to you randomly at the start of the game, and you can't execute on the same strategy every single time.
You know, yeah, and you feel super clever when you have to adapt to what you're doing and make it work.
So, but then that's also sort of a useful feature of it, right? Because a game that's either asymmetrical or as...
You know what did it fairly well is Terraforming Mars.
Because mm-hmm.
you really have to...
Oh.
Adapt the cards you're drawing and playing based on your corporation so they have synergy between those two things, right? Because those are... That has all those elements. And it's crazy random what you're getting out of the deck. So that actually has a lot of similarities between to play around, which is crazy to say, but they have a lot of the same kind of deduction, solution, move forward system.
So do you think that's a useful application of player powers? Or that is to... It's not necessarily a catch-up mechanism, but it limits the ability that someone can use, like, a refined approach and kind of resets everybody to the same problem of, like, solve the puzzle of these resources, like, what you've started with.
Yeah, so, like, and it comes back to, like, what is interesting and fun. If you're making a game where it's, like, here's a dynamic puzzle that changes, right, which is what we're talking about here, and solving that is cool. People like solving puzzles. That's super neat. And video games do that all the time. They just do it through the environment, and that's the whole game, and it ends when they run out of time and effort and money. The other one is it's always the same, and you hone in your skills, right? So, like, chess, or you could take any kind of, like, shooter that is where everything is known, the level's known, the shooter's known, all that stuff is known, and you're just, like, who has the biggest skill set in executing? So,
it's like Counter-Strike versus PUBG.
Yeah.
So let's take the angle from PlayerUnknown's Battlegrounds and go back into tabletop war games.
Sure.
Variable player powers, where people have different units that can do different things. Asymmetry, where you've got completely different objectives. Does it do both? Does it do one better than the other? Is it a good blend?
So, what kind of, like, war games is a broad category. What are
you thinking? I'm thinking of the traditional, you know, like, the ones that are hexes and counters.
Oh, and geez.
You know.
I don't know, that's an area that I've only played a couple of different games in that sort of genre. If we were talking a little bit more like the dudes on a map style of thing, I've played a few more of those, and they sometimes have the same kind of, not the same variation of units, but factions have different units and different powers. I think those are, I mean, they're asymmetrical and they have different player powers, but they don't do what we were just talking about at all. Like, for example, Axis and Allies, Granddaddy, dudes on a map game, you go online and there are people that have their first five turns or whatever completely plotted out. They're going to do this every time. If they start as, for each country that they
X,
start
Y, or
as,
Z, yeah.
Right? So if there's, I don't know, maybe if there's not enough variation in how you can start off, you can end up just creating more situations to solve. People will still just solve them. Like, if there's only six different objectives that someone could be dealt out at the start of the game, people will still figure out what's the best way to do each of those six things, and then the best player is still going to know how to execute perfectly against each of those six things. If there's not some other setup, not some other variation that happens there, right?
It's really hard to, like, have dynamic type stuff in board games. Like, we do it through card draws and decks, but all the information is known. You can start deducing a lot, right? That's like when you start to introduce dice, it helps to make things unpredictable if you do them in certain ways.
Yeah.
I was just thinking about, I think it's Marco Polo might have player powers, but they feel game-breaking. I think it's Marco Polo.
Okay.
But I enjoy those because each one is so crazy powerful.
In a different way.
In a different, completely different way that you just feel like you're this amazing master of a dude when you pull it off. But, and when you play, you don't want to play with the same one you just played with. Like, you want a different one because you want that experience.
Okay.
So, does it feel like you're playing a different game, or do you still feel like you're manipulating the same systems?
It's the same system, but it feels like you're breaking it, which
in a different
I think
way.
Is just a sign that it's a good, legit player power, because it's so different. Because it's breaking the rule. Like, you break this, like, you're outside of the system.
You're doing something that you literally could not have done
otherwise.
Yeah. So it's not just incentivizing you to get some other type of thing or to go towards different
goals. But no way would I call that game asymmetrical. Because you're essentially all doing the same thing, same win condition, same whatever. And I'm pretty sure that's the game. I'll have to look it up. It's probably not.
That sounds right. Yeah. So here's the question, though. How many unique player powers are there in Marco Polo? Do you know offhand?
I have no idea.
Okay.
At least four, because I think it's 1-4.
So that raises the question, once you've played all of those player powers, will playing any of them feel new again or different?
Well, I don't play games often enough. So here's my problem with player powers. Everybody uses the sell a game to tell me that it's, you know, hey, you can replay this game a million times, or there's a different experience every time. I don't play games that much, and it's not that much of a different experience.
No, like, if you're comparing to, like, Dominion, that was one of the selling points of Dominion as well. It was like, oh, the base set, you use 10 cards in every game, and there's this many different ones, and that's this many different permutations of cards, and you'll never play them all, ever. So this game has infinite replayability.
And, like, turn three, you're like, well, I'm just going to do this and this. And you're like, oh, well, that's over.
So a bit. Yeah, but even comparing to that, that's player powers are generally not matching up to even that level of...
of differentiation?
Like, yeah. Differentiation from game to game. So I think using them for replayability is almost always not that... like, it's not going to... The amount that it contributes to your desire to replay the game is going to be way, way less than the system interesting, yeah. Right?
Now, if this would be... like, you would know if you have an asymmetrical game, if you could hate one thing and love the other, because then the system's got to be different.
Yeah, that's a super good... that's a really, really good kind of... not definition, but...
that would be my type of definition.
Characteristic. Like, you can say, the game's asymmetrical if you can love playing one.
Like, I love the orcs, and I hate Frodo.
Yeah.
Like, if we're playing this, I will not play Frodo, because that game is garbage. But orcs are awesome.
I'll play it, yeah.
Yeah.
That makes sense.
Solved it. Podcast over. No.
So, perhaps the poster child for the crazy variable player powers is Cosmic Encounter. And I hear a lot of people say, you know, it's got infinite replayability because there are now hundreds of
aliens. You will die eventually.
You can't argue that logic.
That's the kind of logic I bring to the table, guys.
But yeah, Cosmic Encounter. If you have not played,
I have not played it. That's why
you've played.
I have played it once and was not a fan.
Oh, okay. What happened to you?
I will be honest, and I've not the only person who's expressed this opinion, I believe. But to me, it felt like Munchkin in space.
Okay.
Where everybody has something different that they can do.
Yeah.
Much like Munchkin, where you have your different equipment that you're wearing, right? So you have, you know, different strength weapon or different strength armor or whatever. But then everybody gets to the step before victory, and then everybody punches everybody else until someone manages to slip past and win.
Which, just by curiosity, which version did you play?
I assume it was the most recent version at the time.
Fantasy Flight 1, Square Box?
That sounds right.
Okay, cool. I've played it a few times. I'm not the biggest fan of it, but I wouldn't characterize it as... it feels a lot like that type of game. Like, everyone's doing zany stuff and punching each other, and there definitely is an element of someone's one away from victory, let's ruin everything about them until someone else is one away from victory, and then you kind of get to a critical mass where you can't be stopped. But I think the player powers in that, I think, was it Mark expressed this sentiment as well? Like, make the game work because they are, like, completely rule-breaking, whereas, like, stuff in Munchkin is... You have five more than someone else.
Right,
and
yeah.
And you can give the monster three more.
You're still definitely using the same systems.
You're generally just kind of stacking up numbers. You can have stuff in Cosmic Encounter, like, when your guys die, they get to go on the planet anyway. Or each of your ships counts as four ships. So you're just four times more people than anyone. And they're just so wildly different that the types of situations you can get into are at least more interesting to play around in and more interesting to talk about later, which is a big reason I think that the game kind of sticks around as much as it does. Because you get the same kinds of, like, goofy story situations out of that you get out of a D&D campaign where you know, the rogue stole the doorknobs off the door behind you, and now you can't leave, and the dragon...
I hate when that happens.
Whatever kind of ridiculous thing happens there.
So let me ask you this about Cosmic Encounter. Are there aliens in the game or in the expansions that let you win in a way other than getting 5 planets?
I believe so. I haven't ever played as any of them. I thought there was one that, like, won when you got all of your ships destroyed or something like that. I think there are some straight-up alternate win conditions, but I haven't played frequently enough to say for sure.
Okay, so since my question then would be, if that's the case, are those aliens asymmetrical compared to the rest of the aliens who have to win by getting 5?
Man, come on.
5 planets.
You're giving me the business. This doesn't count as a question. Josh,
don't look at me. I never played the game. You can't let bailing you out
that's,
now.
That's why you're the best person to answer it. Does that sound asymmetrical to you? Like, just a completely different win condition?
No.
Same system, different win condition? No?
No, because, so? I mean, any Euro has, like, 15 different win conditions.
No, but, like, you have one that only you can do.
Do they have different win conditions, or do they just have different ways of getting points?
They have different.
Those are the same.
No, they're not the same.
They're definitely the same.
No.
Because, like, alright, so if I have a game where, like, sugar gives you $1,
yeah,
and money, $5 gives you 2 points,
uh-huh,
and then, like, if you get this far down the sugar road...
Right. You don't need to prototype it.
Okay. No. But, like, sure, then that's an extra, that's, like, 3 points per dude, I got that far. Then, and I can score, I could just ignore one of those or two of those and score all mine on this. Then that's basically, like, you're telling me I have different win conditions. Because the victory points is just masking what I'm deciding to do. And if you have a player powers in that game, then, and I'm rewarded more for doing one of those things, then you're telling my victory condition is to do that thing because I'm more powerful and I can do it better than everybody else.
Okay, like, I don't disagree with that, but in
well,
that
then
case...
why are you talking?
Well, because I do disagree with it, actually. I just didn't want you to react so negatively. But those are all kind of in the same direction, right? And the types of win conditions that I think make sense to argue about here at all are ones that have you doing something that you just would not ever do if it wasn't related to your win condition. So, get all your people killed, or leave garbage tiles on your farm for some reason. Like, just things that you would generally... would be bad for anyone
would
else to
go
do.
Go against you
or
doing that. Would it would be...
unwanted.
Okay.
At least, like, useless at best for any other player to do.
Mm-hmm.
And there's cards, like, an example I can talk a little bit better about is Magic the Gathering. There's a bunch of cards that you can put in your deck to allow you to win the game in a way that other people just can't. So, I have over 100 life, I win the game. Or I have more than 200 cards in my deck, I win the game. They have you doing things that you, like, that actually aren't productive for any other deck to do, unless you have that as your win condition.
Sure. I mean, a land tax deck, that was kind of like that.
Okay.
Because nobody else could really, like, it was just to slow the game down to a halt and then just slowly leech them to death. Which
so you would win that game by just kind of,
by
like, they would run out of cards.
Most of the time, or run out of cards, or, yeah.
Okay.
Most of the time they would just give up halfway through the death. Because they were like, this is awful.
Makes sense.
Yeah, I would say if you have different win conditions based on different systems, maybe.
Okay.
But, like, that one's hard. Well, win conditions in general are hard. Because you have to then boil them down to, like, either points or a race or
sure
something, right? Like, that's where it gets fuzzy for me.
Alright, so Mark brought up the point in the conversation about co-op games.
Mm.
And if everybody is playing on one side, and the system is playing against them, is that asymmetry?
So no, because
the system isn't a... I don't want to get into a fight with the person that's going to tell me that the system counts as a player in Pandemic. Like, I just don't
want
to...
I don't want that.
Don't send me a geek mail... I don't want it.
What's your geek mail address?
It's nowhere ever. Don't. I don't want it. So, no, I don't think that it being cooperative makes it asymmetrical because, like, I'm not going to count a game system as a player, even if you're using patented Automa cards or whatever thing that you're doing. But it could still be asymmetrical because of the players being able to do different things from each other.
Yeah, and a little bit what Jay was saying, like, is playing against the system mean it's asymmetric?
No.
We would never say that in a video game. We would never say the...
You don't say a single-player game is an asymmetrical game.
Like, no, that seems ridiculous. Now, you should think of it that way if you're designing the level.
Right, because you don't want it to be, like...
You should at least consider that, like, you are building the environment for someone to participate in and manipulate and experience.
And they should feel like they're... Yeah, sure.
That they're being rewarded or penalized based on their choices appropriately.
Sure, but that's just game design. That's...
Exactly. Okay. So you shouldn't be...
Yeah, that doesn't...
All count. Games are that, right?
Yeah, and you're not a player. Like, you, the game designer, aren't...
You're not an active player.
Yeah.
You're a co-author of the experience, right. But you're not an active player.
Sure. So yeah, I don't think I would ever say that.
I wouldn't either.
There really's got to be another participating player.
All right, so then let's look at Pandemic with the bioterrorist.
Okay.
Okay? That now is that an asymmetrical game because player is now taking part of the system?
It's a completely... No, that's not why, though. It's an asymmetrical game because there's another human interacting with a completely different system of rules. Like, my movement around the map is hidden, and I do it in a different way, and when I go places, I'm depositing cubes out, and I don't want... My objective is also completely different. So, like, the way that I'm interacting with the board state and changing it... Like, the board state is common between me and the other players, but the moves that I'm able to make are, like, almost... I think they're 100% unique to me. Like, they can't do any of the things that I can do. And I can't do any of the things that they can do. And I don't want to.
Now, do you like playing that side better than the other side?
Yeah. No, okay. I like playing...
So you love one and you don't like the other one?
I don't dislike Pandemic, but...
But you really like the other
one. I would rather play Bioterrorist and that game more.
So that means that's the Mills measure of if it's asymmetry. Yeah.
And then you have that situation in a lot of one versus many games. You have Scotland Yard, sure. Dracula, and all of those.
And those all are certainly... asymmetrical, but for the same reason, right? Like, the experience you get...
Well, and the system is designed around that difference.
Yeah.
I mean, you could say one versus many, but they could be 1v1.
It could be 1v1, it could be many versus...
You would never call a two-player game 1v1 unless it was a head-to-head battle with the exact same stuff, or asymmetrical.
Yeah, okay.
Right? Because otherwise it's just a two-player game. I mean, you could say 1v3, 1v4...
You would never
say that. You would never use that term.
You would never say one versus one in
unless it's head-to-head battle, like straight up. And even most of those games are based on deck building a deck or having a different set of battle stuff. Games. Yeah, yeah. Which is why I was just thinking about that term because I think we use that in place of saying, "Hey, this is different." It's obvious when we say 1v4 because it has to work differently.
Yeah.
Right? Because there's just... I haven't seen a game that where both systems are the same and it's 1v a couple of people.
Yeah, even when you have, like, the Magic special event stuff, the Archenemy decks that came out, they give the one-player additional... Like, it becomes asymmetrical because one player has additional things they can interact with. Well, they get a new resource.
Don't say it becomes asymmetrical because that means every game... It could be asymmetrical.
No, it does, because they gave him a completely different system that the other players can't interact with. Like, they bolted on a module, but...
Okay, yeah, okay, he's independent, or she...
Right, so I have a deck of archenemy cards that I can activate different times, and then the other players can never activate them, they just have to deal with the results of those things. And so they just kind of changed a little bit about the systems, and maybe, like... Giving a player an entire system unique to themselves is probably enough to do it. That kind of leads into Vast. Do we want to talk about Vast?
Okay, so let's talk about Vast. Vast is definitely wildly asymmetrical, to the point of being four or five unique games played on the same board.
Sure.
What kind of design lessons can we learn from Vast?
One, if you make something unique and new... Well, at least present it as unique and new. You will at least get people's attention.
Yeah, for sure.
And I think you end up coming with really unique solutions to problems when you set out to create something like that. That's why you can play the cave, right? You can play the cave not because... I guarantee you, I might be totally wrong, but you play the cave not because they thought, oh, it'd be amazing if you could play the cave. Because they're like, how do we get somebody that can play like this... But this makes zero sense yeah. system-wise.
Like, someone needs to be putting these tiles out.
Yeah. Oh, wait, we'll make them the cave. That makes... to fix that problem.
Yeah, but it makes sense. Like,
yeah, it's, no, it's cool, and I think it's awesome, but I don't think you get there from the from like, the from get-go.
Thematically, you probably don't start... Well, you might, right? Like, it's not that different from...
I wouldn't, but, like, there are definitely people
right,
that
but, like, someone, you know... creative. No.
Exactly. Someone creative with skills and, you know...
Well, it's not that thematically different from, like, a dungeon master, right? It's just it's just codifying that it actually is, in this case, a competitive role. You're not just trying to make a cool place for the other players to do stuff in.
And that...
You're trying to get them, and there's rules on you hampering you from just doing it.
And I think that's why Vast has done well and is interesting, because they took... a system that is not is a system that's familiar in terms of like dungeon masters and going through stuff, and put restraints on it and made it competitive and made it clear of how those interactions would happen. And that's and for a lot of people like me, that seems a lot more interesting to play through and less like work.
Sure,
because playing through an RPG to me, just like I'd rather just. Go make up silly songs and stuff by myself.
Hang out. Ask your friends for $20.
Ask for my friends for $20.
Alright, so one other thing I wanted to bring up was going back to co-op games. A lot of co-op games have those variable player powers so that players are not doing the exact same thing every turn. How much do you see that as a requirement? Because I can imagine playing something like Forbidden Island where everybody had the exact same powers would be significantly less interesting.
I think for co-op games, it's not a co-op game if I could play it by myself.
Hmm.
Straight up.
If controversial.
Controversial. If I could play it by myself, you made a single-player game that multiple people can play together.
You made a single-player game where other people can move pieces.
Yes. You made you made Mario, and I'm just going to pass the controller, and you try now.
Little brother controller, yeah. Like, unplugged SNES controller you hand over to somebody. I think that's the function of... asymmetry, you mentioned this earlier, but, like, to stop that, like, stop quarterbacking and to stop the sensation that it doesn't matter who really does what as long as all the things get done. So, I think without variable player powers, a lot of these games, like, especially the ones that are of that format, Pandemic and Forbidden Island and Forbidden Desert, those games, if they didn't have different player powers, it's basically just everybody going and, like, shoveling cubes off the board, like, or tiles, or whatever, water.
Yeah. Zombies.
Yeah. Like, there's five obstacle here, and I have to go get rid of the obstacle, and I'll go there and get rid of one of the obstacle, and then some more will appear. And without that, it would really feel like, at the beginning of each round, you should just... It doesn't matter who takes care of what, right? So it's just, all of us should collectively plan out what's the most efficient way to get this stuff done, and then we'll all go do whatever's closest to us and kind of solve it. And so the powers there are needed to make it so that it does matter which person does which thing on their turn.
Which we have seen for the past 30 years with classes
in
video games. I mean, that's literally why they do it, right? Otherwise, you're all just doing the same thing.
Yeah, like if everyone in D&D was just... The fighter, like,
yeah, everybody was just dice.
There's gonna hit that guy, and then I'm gonna hit this guy, and it doesn't really matter who we hit because we're all hitting, and then we've kind of done it.
Ta-da.
I don't know,
yeah,
right. So there's not different types of obstacles, and there's not really any timing issue. It's just get rid of all these numbers until they're zero, and then you're done. So yeah, no, I think that's pretty crucial for co-op games, at least the ones that are that shape, where you're. Traveling around and solving a massive obstacle that all kind of work the same way.
So you think the variable player powers are a way to kind of put the lid on quarterbacking just because it's harder to keep track of what everybody can do?
I think it's a weak sauce lid.
It's a weak lid on quarterbacking, but it's a stronger lid, or not strong, it's not a lid, this isn't a good metaphor for this.
No.
It's a, you know, like the Coke Freestyle machine where you can get any flavor, you can put a flavor in your turn.
Oh, like they have, like, Moe's?
Yeah.
Yeah, except none of them taste as good.
You can get, like, lemon... Let's just... your, you know, bad opinion. You can get lemon Coke. It's delicious. If you want it to be better, then make half lemon Coke and half... But the point is that you're...
I would like you to talk for another 40 minutes about lemon
Coke. I can, because of how good it is. I know a lot of words to describe the deliciousness. Lemon. And lemonness.
Citrus. That's one of them.
Stop it. But your turn feels different. Even if you're being quarterbacked, they're going to say, yeah, this is better than just being told, like, arbitrarily someone should do something. You're still going to be told, hey, James, you're this character, and you're down here near something you can interact with. You should do it. And maybe that's better. I think that is better than someone arbitrarily should deal with this. Like, I'm just going to play everybody's turns, like, move all the pieces by myself.
It's better, but it's still not interesting to me.
It's not, it doesn't fix it, and because what fixes quarterbacking, as I think we've talked about before, is don't play with that guy. But it does make it so that it matters who does what, and so then it makes the process of, if someone's quarterbacking.
It results in optimal choices, right? Yeah. So, and then as soon as you do that, then you're not really making decisions. Because there's one right answer. Well, there could be multiple ones, but, like, if people are healing, we need to pick a guy, and then you're the guy that heals everybody by 10, and you're the same spit, or whatever.
Yeah, you should do
then
it.
Then you're probably the one that's going to do it.
Sure. So it does also reduce the... By making it so that people are better at different things,
it does narrow
the space, right? Like, here's the two things you should do, instead of, it doesn't matter.
There's 30 things that can
be done. Someone do some of them.
That's a good point. I think every designer, just to jump a little bit, but I think every designer should think about how player powers would work in their game, because I think what it will tell them is how people will play the game, right? Because if you're thinking about player powers on your end, then you're thinking about what kind of strategies I can do. When it comes to asymmetry, I think you have to set off to really make diverse systems and how you're going to manipulate it from the get-go, and that's going to be hell of a lot harder, but probably result in something that we haven't really seen much of. Because there's not a ton of examples out there of truly...
like, truly radically asymmetrical games.
Yeah, yeah.
So, like, Vast and Netrunner and Stronghold. And, like, there's a...
Yeah, but you feel like you can name most of them, right? Like, that means there's so much space. There's so much space for just...
Especially if they're not Dungeon Man and... Adventure Party, right? Like, that's the most common one. And
like, I would love to see, like a classic-type Euro take, but the actual systems for doing stuff are just vastly different. But I haven't really seen that, right? Like, I haven't had that experience yet.
Yeah, there haven't been a whole lot. I'm trying to think if there's any that I can think of that are... like, Stronghold is not really a Euro. There's resource stuff going on, but it's a combat battle type of game at the heart, I think. I don't think there's any, like, Euro game where you have completely different abilities from another player and then you're still expected to be. Actually, I think that's probably one of the... stumble backwards into it, but one of the reasons that that's not seen so often is because you're expected to be evaluated against each other. And if you're playing completely different systems... like, Euro games are all about score. Like, almost every Euro game is
or
about
racing.
Score.
Yeah, one of the, yeah.
Right, yeah. Or a race to a score. and evaluating your score versus another person's score in systems as different as something like as Vast or Netrunner, even, seems really arbitrary a lot of the time, right? Like, if you've got 42 points as the island, and I have 36 points as goblins...
yeah, it almost feels like you're lifting up the... You're peeking behind the curtain, right? And you're like, right. Oh, these scores don't really matter.
You don't really... yeah, you have no idea, like, if that means anything. Someone won, and you're like, all right, sure.
Cool.
Like, I guess you did something... you did your thing better on some scale than I
Where, in reality, really what you want is a game like, you know, Cops and Robbers.
Yeah.
Like, I do these things, you do those things, and I can affect you, and you can do me. So,
like, in Bass, someone wins.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah, I mean, you all have a win condition, and you're racing to be the first one of that condition.
Yeah.
Not necessarily get a certain number of points.
And in Netrunner, the points that you are scoring points, but they're printed on the cards that are in one player's deck. Like, this card is 3 points. If you get it, it's 3 points. If I get it, it's 3 points. Like,
you're fighting over stuff.
Yeah, like, I have a card, and it's 3 points. So it's not a different thing. But, like, I'm trying to think of, like, if there was a Euro game, like, what...
I would love a Euro game where one guy's the boxer, one guy's like the guy that hypes everything, like the Don dude, like the hypes everything.
The promoter.
Yeah.
And another person's like the, you know, the announcers and a ringmaster. So, like, you have like these very different roles with very different objectives, but you all kind of have to pull resources from one another to be able to do what you want to do best.
You know, I've seen a couple of games like this at Unpub, now that I'm thinking about it. There was...
Was it Galaxy Team Alpha Number 1 Go?
No.
Two?
No. Well, maybe the sequel. I don't know. There was an amusement park game, Parkies, right? I think it was called, where one player is actually building an amusement park and the other players are, well, another player is going through that amusement park and trying to, like, get fun points.
See, like, that's neat. Like, I don't know how you would make that. So I think it's just some challenges and just designing with those two systems in mind, because you have to make two games.
Yeah, no, they have to all be different and comparable to each other in some way, right? Like, you have to be able to, if it's a game with scores, like, you have to be able to measure them against each other in a way that's not just nonsense.
Yeah, and you can't necessarily have, like, all or nothing either, right?
But you...
Like,
you can, but not as much, not as often in a Euro game. Like, yeah, in a battle game, you certainly can.
So, yeah, and which, so if you're designing something that's asymmetric, it is much easier to be like, it's all or nothing. Either you get this or I get this. Or one of us four get this. In a Euro game, it's not gonna work as...
Cleanly, right?
Cleanly, I think, it's just not gonna feel right if it's more like that. Because it would have to be something more along the lines of, like, I do this... And you to do it, and then I benefit a little more, but you also, it's also not bad for you, because I'm riding your ride, or whatever.
Mm.
It sounds like when we think of Euro games, we think of a single, sometimes what we call elegant system. And when we think of asymmetrical games, we think of more than one system attached together.
At least I do.
Yeah, no, I when I think of a Euro game, I think of... It's generally a contest to see who can use this machine the best.
Yes.
And so that doesn't lend itself to asymmetry, to strong asymmetry.
Yeah, and usually want to optimize, which goes against... Usually want things to... If you're optimizing and stuff, it's easy to compare through if everybody's symmetrical. That's why then with player powers, I feel like they're less valuable, because in a lot of those Euro games, because they feel... Tactons are on where they just feel obvious, maybe.
It's, yeah, like you said, they're the strategies. So it's basically the designers said, here's the seven strategies that I identified that work, and here's, I'll tell you to do one at the start of the game. And that's kind of a weak, like, the variable player powers there are usually pretty minor impact on the rules, and as you break them, I think that the player type that is most attracted to Euro games would... find that usually to be unsatisfying, or not to be, like, super uncharitable, but it makes it difficult for you to compare how well you did in one game versus the previous game, and I do think that's a major drive for a lot of players that play those types of games. Like, I got better. My score was better. I did better. And if you've got a wildly different starting position, then that makes it really difficult to...
Or different objectives, even.
Yeah.
If you start to get in that territory. Like, how am I supposed to compare my two different plays of this game if my objectives were collect three rings or,
like,
kill Steve? killed Steve real good this time, I guess.
For the player that wants to, like, perfect their approach, that's frustrating, right? Don't want to be tossed into a completely different situation every time. That's basically a new game. Why I want to play the same game and get better.
I tell you what, though, if you can make an ace... symmetrical game that had that core system, but the rules were done in a way that allowed you to understand how to play both sides, like, as clearly without being just two big different rule sets. That's where the trick is. Because you do that, and you'll make me feel differently than I've felt before playing a game. And then all hell's... It's, like, basically vast, but, like, we both read these simple rule sets, but now we understand these differences.
You know what the other person's doing as well.
Yeah.
Like, instead of having to, like, watch them get taught how to play it. I guess you don't have to, right, if you're playing vast. Like, that's certainly the weakest thing about that game, is that if you want to really understand what everybody is doing, you have to learn all umpteen of the systems that are there. And they're not all, like, simple. They're all some level of complicated and chewy and interesting, so that's just a lot of brain space. You could play it just assuming that, like, the goblin player is like, that guy appeared here. Okay, sure. I guess that's probably fine.
Yeah, I mean, there is some interest in playing it literally not knowing what everyone else can do. And so you are, you know, if you're the knight, you're wandering into this cave and you have no idea how the cave behaves.
That's not
And you're
for
trying
me,
to
man.
Find a dragon, but you don't know how, what the dragon can do. Yeah. I think you get more into the role-playing territory.
So why are you adding player powers to access? Because that's already hard enough to teach people.
Because I'm doing it the way that we said that people should do it. So when you start off playing the game, I'm going to give you a thing that says, try a strategy. And then when you get into the advanced game, I'm going to say, do whatever you want.
So you're going to flip that little part.
Yeah, I'm going to flip the script on it right there. But I'm going to try to basically do what we were saying before, which is, you know, when you get into that game, it's a pretty daunting sandbox of things. The player powers are going to be a guidepost in my mind. So they're going to say, as this character, the first few turns of the game, you should be trying to interact with this system. And don't worry about other stuff, because this is what you need to do first. And then once you're done with that, you can start interacting with the rest of the game. So it just kind of like gives you a little bit of direction.
Basically, like a tutorial of what your objective is.
Yeah, actually, like a tutorial is a pretty good description of what I'm trying to do with those. And I think you could keep playing with them if you like them. But I think the advanced version of the game would be, at the start of the game, look at the board and figure out what the thing you want to do is. But since you can't do that the first time you play the game, it's impossible. You don't understand anything about what the board means to you or where resources are or anything like that. Instead, look at this card and it's going to suggest, why don't you try looking for a tile that has this on it and go use that? Because it's better for you than anyone else, so you should go do it. That's my thought process with it, is that it does restrict people's strategy space, but like that could be intentional and good if that's how you're using it.
All right, final thoughts on asymmetry and player powers in designs.
I think if you're going to make an asymmetry type game, you have to set off to do it. If you're going to want to do player powers, wait until you've done everything else to do it. So one's going to have to be first and one's going to have to be last.
So I guess I would say if you're adding variable player powers to your game for replayability, you should think about the fact that the amount of replayability that's going to add is way reduced compared to the replayability in the system itself and the replayability of playing with different people with different playstyles. So if you're thinking that the game doesn't have a long lifespan, like it's not very replayable, that's not going to extend it enough, in my mind, to solve that problem. So it's like a bonus, but it doesn't solve it. If you're thinking of using them to guide people through parts of a big game space, that kind of makes sense. But it's not advanced. That to me seems more like a learning game thing, or a thing for beginners to help them figure out where the edges of your play space are. And the experts would probably rather have more freedom. I think that makes sense and kind of lets people decide what they're doing on a game-to-game basis.
All right. So, Game Designers North Carolina News. Mark McGee and Daniel Solis have a game on the next Buttonshy Kickstarter. The game is called Kintsugi, which is the Japanese art form of repairing broken pottery with gold lacquer to show that it is better for being broken. In the game, you are a master artist performing this art. And that hits Kickstarter November 11th and will run until the 18th.
I think it also has Hero Tech with it, and I
in
played that.
Vino Mortis?
Yes. But the Hero Tech, I played at Unpub, and it's real good as well. So
cool.
That's a cool package. And then Nat Levan and I's Manhattan Dice Contest, Dice Meltdown, the Manhattan Dice Game. Anyway, we're a finalist in that. There's two versions of the contest, one Game Crafter and one you send directly, and we're one of the finalists on the direct send. So that's fun. We'll see if anything comes with that. I had a lot of fun playing around with somebody else's IP. That's it, I think, for news.
All right. If they want to get in touch with you guys, how can they do it? Drew?
You can shout at me on Twitter at evenweirdermove, or you can send me that geek mail I didn't want at anevenweirdermove on BoardGameGeek.
And Josh.
You can hit me up at Joshua J. Mills on Twitter, Joshua J. Mills on BoardGameGeek, Joshua J. Mills on Gmail, Joshua J. Mills on Facebook, Joshua J. Mills on Instagram, Joshua J. Mills on the internet, domain level, and Joshua J. Mills on WhatsApp. I don't know. I'm just going to name stuff I can.
What's your Switch ID?
Classy.
All right. And as always, you can find me on Twitter as @ApolloContinuum. See the show notes if you need the spelling for that. Or find me on BoardGameGeek as SpaceNut. To discuss this episode, please go to our guild on BoardGameGeek. Go to podcast.gdofnc.com, and that will redirect you to our guild on BoardGameGeek. All feedback is welcome. We also have a group Twitter account you can follow at GDofNC, which stands for Game Designers of North Carolina. That'll do it for this episode of the Game Designers of North Carolina podcast. Have a good night.
Or good day.